Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. As I was most Evan Setter and joined by host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSetter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated. And I want to say Happy New Year as well. As the calendar is now over in the 2019. We're joining you guys the day after the Suns Warriors game where they lost 132-109. The Suns are now 9-29 in the season. They're only a half game out of the number one spot in the reverse standings again. I thought they weren't going to be back in that position, but they are slowly but surely are. But we're going to hit our usual game recap today, recapping this game. And I'll toss it your way, Brendan, because you weren't there last night. I was. And I want to get your thoughts just not being there in person, what you saw on TV. And you also rewatched. I saw your Twitter this morning of you posting some highlights. What were your thoughts on today or yesterday's game?
Yeah, I was. I mean, right, like 18 minutes of the first half, they were pretty competitive. I thought that was pretty surprising and impressive. Can't really, I don't know, I guess maybe I've just seen the Warriors do this to so many teams for so many years, teams much better and much deeper than the Suns. So to me, you know, staying in it for as long as they did and making the plays that they did in the first half was pretty impressive to me. I wasn't expecting them to win this game, but at the same time, you know, some of the same mistakes. This wasn't just about the Warriors getting really hot from three, although they did shoot 14 of 28, and Curry especially got some off that were pretty tough. But it was really just a lot of the same mistakes that I was disappointed to see, because we talked about the point guard problem, defending and containing point guards, especially ones that can shoot the ball well and score the ball well. That, of course, happened again last night with Steph Curry going off for 34. But, you know, overall, I don't think it was anything that they should hang their heads about. But I do think that seeing some of those same issues pop up again. And I was also hoping, I think, for a little bit of a bigger defensive night from DeAndre Ayton. But again, the Warriors are a tough matchup. So overall, nothing too surprising. And I think it was an optimistic game, even though they did lose by so many by the end of it.
A fun thing to keep track of there when you're talking there, Brendan, was the point guards that we touched on in the last episode of how they're getting consistently torched. And Steph Curry was their guy last night, 34 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 and 9 from 3. That trend looks like it's going to continue. But let's go into our usual free throws here. And I'll start off here with mine. It's going to be DeAndre Ayton, who had, I think, the best game, probably not of all the Suns' young core, I'd probably say the best young game. 25 points, 10 rebounds, and assist. 9 of 17 from the field, 7 of 8 from the free throw line, though, which I want to touch on with you for a little few minutes here, Brendan, because 8 free throw attempts, I believe that is a now season high for DeAndre Ayton. And I think slowly but surely he's fixing things on the offensive end. And he's kind of realizing now, especially against a smaller team like Golden State last night, had Kevin Durant on him sometimes, even Draymond Green as well, that when he has the size advantage and when he forces himself to get contact, he's going to go to the line almost every time.
Yeah, I liked how Igor Kokoschkov put it pregame. I mean, we might as well just make DeAndre Ayton the first free throw here. I think he said something along the lines of, you know, it's an insult when teams feel like they can switch against you. Now, of course, the Warriors can. They can switch against you, and they're going to win. But I like that perspective on it, the mentality that he was trying to give to the Suns going up against that defense and just, you know, taking it – not personally, like, you know, I'm going to beat up the guy trying to defend me, but, you know, if they're going to put a small guy on Ayton, especially, like, he should, you know, really try to maximize what he can do against that. And I think he did. And even against Kevon Looney, who is tall and long, but not as quick or fast or strong as Ayton, I think he did a good job there too. So it was nice to see. I mean, 25 and 10 is nothing to, like I said, nothing to hang your head on. And obviously they didn't get the win, but that's another monster performance from a guy who's improved quite a bit over the past month or so.
Yeah, 6 of his past 9 games now, DeAndre Ayton's scored 20-plus points. Do you think he's starting to get comfortable now, especially over the past few weeks since Devin Booker's been back, that he really is entrenching himself as a primary scoring option? He's kind of doing well in it, because it's a game now where, again, he was over 15 field goal attempts.
Yeah, the motor, I think, too, is one of the bigger things, too, just his understanding of, I mean, I hate to keep using the same kind of language, but it is just so impressive to see that he's kind of realizing the impact he can have on the game just by playing hard and by doing what he's great at already. And, you know, it's even more exciting when you see it work against the best teams. And that's exactly what's happened the past three games of this homestand now, is he's gone up against elite matchups between Steven Adams, Nikola Jokic, now Draymond Green, and the Warriors kind of all around team defense that's so tough for so many guys to score on. And he's done it consistently. Another four offensive rebounds for him last night. And like you mentioned, getting to the line. So, you know, he's not doing this just by, you know, getting more post touches. It's not like Booker's out and they have no other option. So, okay, you know, we'll watch DeAndre Ayton go 10 of 23 for 25 points. No, he's doing it in a really efficient way. And that's the most exciting part.
Yeah, that's for sure. And let me toss it back to you for your free throw, Brennan. What was yours? Your main takeaway?
Yeah, I'll just go with the defense overall in the first half. I thought was pretty good, all things considered. When I rewatched this morning, I only watched the first half, but there was a lot of positive signs. D'Anthony Melton had three steals in that first quarter. One that I tweeted out of just Mikal Bridges forced Kevin Durant to the baseline, and he kind of tried to kick it back out to Curry, who was somewhat open when the defense collapsed in, and Melton read it as it was happening and rolled back to steal the pass and had to get fouled by Curry. Otherwise he would have had a transition, a fast break dunk on the other side. And he had a fast break dunk to start the game. The first possession on offense for the Warriors, they did exactly that. Melton switched on to Klay Thompson as he was coming off of a screen and picked that pass off. So the two guys that are really leading this defensive revolution for the Suns, turning into an actual competent defensive team, are the rookies that we've been talking about so much, and they did it again last night.
Is that surprising to you? I mean, not really when you see them in college, but maybe on the NBA level. I haven't really heard of a team where the rookies are the teams that are really like pushing the guys forward on flipping the switch as far as like a culture goes with defense.
It's really crazy. I mean, I think maybe part of it is that these are a little bit of older rookies, Bridges being a four-year player and Melton being a two-year guy who was a little on the older side in the first place probably helps, but still, no, I mean, it is pretty incredible to see them kind of doing what needs to be done more than any of these players. And I think it does. It's also a testament to the, I mean, maybe not even player development, but just kind of player, you know, scouting and just acquiring these guys this summer and knowing that they were going to be positive impacts right away. I think that was the hope, and to see it happen has been really incredible. I read my own scouting report of D'Anthony Melton from right before the draft. I wanted to get something up and kind of dive back into his games right before the draft. And it's over at FanSided. If anyone wants to check it out, I tweeted it again. And it was exactly what the best case scenario defensively would have been as a rookie is happening for him. So, you know, he wasn't perfect last night. Another rough offensive game for him and some decision-making problems. He let Curry cut off the ball quite a bit and was kind of flummoxed by the Warriors half-court offense like so many guys are. But making those quick reaction turnover plays is again and again what he's doing and impacting the game that way.
For my second free throw, I'm actually going to go with, I was thinking about going TJ Warren here. He had four assists and a steal, but we touched on TJ a lot, and I feel like it's kind of running it back when we talk about with him. You could probably go with him if you wanted to, but I'll leave that for you if you wanted, Brennan. But for me, it's going to be Kelly Oubre Jr., who had 15 points, three rebounds, didn't do anything as far as box score impact goes on the steals and blocks, but he was really active as far as deflections go. Played 22 minutes, 6 of 12 from the field, 1 of 4 on threes. Like we touched on before with Kelly Oubre, he's very confident in himself. He's not afraid to shoot the ball, and he's really shown that so far in Phoenix, 12 shots in 22 minutes. It's kind of what we hope TJ Warren would be in his six-man role. Like we touched on the offseason that we thought TJ would be in that role. But obviously that didn't happen with his three-point transformation. But it seems like Kelly Oubre, I don't know how to read it long-term with him, because it seems like he might be a guy where whoever offers him the most money is where he'll go this summer. But if he stays long-term, he's a really good second unit cog for that team.
I agree. He's been exactly what you would have hoped for. He's been perfect for that second unit, somebody who just can – take and make open shots. I mean, he's a really efficient offensive player for the most part too, is in terms of which shots he takes. He mostly is just a threes and layups guy. He can get to the line with that length, trying to finish through traffic. So pretty perfect fit for the Suns. And I think hopefully, you know, they're a team that is in the running to, I mean, they will be because they'll have his restricted rights. But I think it seems like the fact that they went out and got him and how quickly he's inserted himself into their plans. I mean, he closed the second, the first half with the starters last night too. So I think he's quickly kind of putting himself on the map for the Suns and showing the value he has. And last night was a great example. I mean, made a lot of big shots when they needed it on the bench, and especially with Jamal Crawford really, really struggling recently, he's been really vital to that bench.
I know this is more of a long-term question, not related to today's game recap, but what's your figure long-term with signing Kelly Oubre? Because I imagine the Suns will throw him an offer sheet for to have the rights to match any offer he gets. And
yeah, they'll definitely extend the qualifying offer for him. Yeah.
What do you think about, like, as far as terms go for him? Because I imagine with how many teams are going to have a lot of cap space, Oubre could be a guy who makes more than TJ Warren next year. And I don't know how comfortable I am paying a guy who won't be a starter more than a guy like TJ Warren, even though with how the market is nowadays, you might have to pay him around $12 to $15 million. But what's your read on what you do for Oubre right now?
Yeah, maybe it is tough because you don't know exactly if he fits as a starter, and paying him so much of your cap, just, you know, one of those Warren or even more type deals because of his defensive potential, a little more than what Warren brings. You do worry maybe because you have Bridges and Jackson there already and Warren and everything. But I mean, I think Warren even is a guy who maybe could come off the bench. And you know, you also will have to factor in whoever the Suns pick in this year's draft or whatever they do with that pick. So it's a far away decision, but I think just as far as his value, just kind of what his production and skill set brings, I think he's maybe even a little more expensive than TJ Warren, but somewhere around, you know, $12 to $14 million a year, I think probably makes sense.
So you would go, if someone offered him, like, let's say $448 million, you'd match that?
Probably. I mean, like I said, a lot can change between them, but I feel like that's pretty fair.
Okay. Yeah. I'd probably hesitate a little bit on that just for cap reasons and see what happens with Josh Jackson. But if Josh Jackson's not in their future long term, it makes a lot of sense to bring back a guy like Kelly Oubre. But let me toss it back to you for your second free throw.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, TJ was really, really rough on defense in the first half, so I feel kind of like I shouldn't go with him, but there weren't a lot of other individual guys who stood out. So it's a tough one. I mean, I guess we could go with Steph Curry, but we've done that for the past three games now. I mean, I think, yeah, we'll just hit on the fact quickly that TJ provided another strong night. And I think what stands out from a box score perspective for him in this game is 4 assists. That's been something that's been really absent from his game for a while now, after getting off to a hot start, making plays for the rest of the team. And so it was good to see that. There was a play in the second quarter or it was late in the first quarter. DeAndre Ayton saw Booker. Klay Thompson was kind of helping off Booker to clog the lane and make it tough to get an entry pass into Ayton. And Ayton pointed, he gestured over to Booker in the corner, and the Suns whipped it all the way around the arc back to Booker before Klay reacted, and Booker nailed the corner three. Getting Booker an open corner three is pretty impressive. It was TJ who had the assist, but that was just a nice team play, and I think it shows what can happen when Warren kind of buys into being a part of an offense rather than getting a head of steam and just trying to score no matter what, which is unfortunately what happens a little too often for him.
We've touched on TJ's improvements so much. I wanted to ask you this before we go into our next segment here, just about him getting more comfortable as a third option. It seems like 24 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal, 8 of 17 from the field in 34 minutes. It seems like he is getting more and more comfortable, like DeAndre and as like the rest of the guys are, just playing with each other.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really like the chemistry that him and Booker have. I mean, that started even last year. We saw a lot of it, especially in transition when those two guys are going downhill on a fast break together. It can get pretty fun trying to watch the defense react to each of them having such a diverse skill set, and Warren adding a three-pointer has just made it even more simple for the offense to kind of open up. But I think, you know, that's the biggest thing I'm watching from him going forward, because we know he can score. The shooting is real. Of course, we can't really argue with that at this point, but seeing him kind of buy into what the system is, not always being the end of a possession, but being a part of an offense and being a part of an efficient, productive offense, I think is the next step for his game, because right now he's really just a scoring weapon. The ball gets to him and it's either going to go in the hoop or it's not. There's not much else.
Yeah, really, TJ's contract's become one of the more valuable ones, in my opinion. 4 years, $50 million. Just a really good bargain contract by Ryan McDonough before he got fired there before the season started. But before we go on to our next segment here, I want to tell you guys really quickly about Locked On NBA Net, the national Twitter account for our network. And if you're not already doing so, please go follow at Locked On NBA Net, because it's one of the more valuable resources out there. Both Brennan and I follow it. You can get attention from guys like me and Phoenix and Brendan, and also around the network in different cities. We have all 30 NBA teams covered for you guys. So if you're not already doing so, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter right now.
I want to also tell you guys about Homie, our favorite new sponsor here on the show, and a really great way as you enter the new year, thinking about any big life changes. A lot of the time that comes with, you know, if you're moving to a new city, thinking about where you're going to live and how to make that happen. If you're coming into Phoenix or looking to move around Phoenix, Homie's the best place to go. They buy and sell homes at a very low price. It's just $199 to list your home with Homie and $1,299 when you close on selling your house at Homie. So it's on average saving these customers over $10,000. They recently sold a $1 million home in record time and saved that homeowner over $60,000 in commission. So, you know, thinking about how expensive this can get, it gives you perspective on just how much of a priority it is for Homie to cut the costs. They also have a team of realtors and agents, just like you need to make this happen. And they're there to support you. And what we're going to do for you guys, if you choose to go with Homie through us, let them know you came from us using a phone number this time, and you'll get $100 off your listing fee. So if you decide to sell your house with these guys, you're going to get an extra $100 off, making it just $99 to list. The phone number you're going to use is 602-892-3335. Give that number a call to get $100 off your listing fee. Again, that's 602-892-3335. Okay, I'll start off with the flagrant fouls here. And mine is going to be, I think it's going to be Jamal Crawford. I mentioned a minute ago, I mean, when his offense isn't going, when he's not making shots, when he's not racking up those assists like we saw on the road trip when he got his career high and was really a big part of the offense going against lesser teams, it's really rough because, you know, a team like the Warriors is going to expose any crack in your defense. And when Crawford's on the court, that's a pretty easy one to exploit. And that really showed up last night. He's 0-for-2 from the field, only 2 assists, and really was unplayable defensively.
What makes you think, as far as Igor goes, with playing Booker and Crawford still together? Because obviously Melton had foul trouble last night, 5,027 minutes. Elliot Kobo only played 4 minutes, though. How close are you personally, Brandon, if you were in Igor's shoes, of not playing Jamal Crawford anymore and just going with Elliot Kobo as a backup?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely should be more equal between the two of them. I think Kobo should have a shot more often than he is right now. You know, he really only played it in crunch time, or I'm sorry, in garbage time when the game was out of hand last night. He wasn't really a part of the rotation. Eric Moreland, Troy Daniels, same way. So, you know, I think Okobo has shown that he's definitely inconsistent, definitely has mental lapses on defense, transition defense especially. We saw the last time he played extended minutes, just had no idea what to do. He kept fouling in transition to stop the ball when they had numbers and were going to be able to defend the possession fine. He just makes very odd decisions on defense. And so maybe he's not the answer some nights, but he definitely deserves a shot at it because we've seen what can happen when he is starting to knock down shots. He has that length on defense when he's locked in and he has an easier matchup. I think he can be effective. So when Jamal Crawford is just providing nothing, I think he definitely should be on the court more, I guess, sooner. Like if Crawford's not working out, like why not? What do you have to lose by trying a Kobo? Like the team is so desperate for talent, especially on the bench, that I think he just, you know, it's worth a shot.
I agree with you there. I think as we get closer to February's trade deadline, it might make sense to play him a little bit more. But as far as the trade deadline does go, I wanted to ask just a long-term question here before I go over to my flagrant foul. And it's just the point guard situation. We've been talking about literally for the past 6 months now about if they're going to get an answer at point guard. D'Anthony Melton's been their answer so far, but I don't think we both know he's not NBA starting point guard material just yet. He's a little too green as far as young age goes. But do you think as we get closer to the deadline and maybe these teams like Indiana who have excess point guards or maybe the Clippers, do you think the Suns are still going to be in the market for a stopgap point guard option like a Patrick Beverley or a Darren Collison, even though they're way out of playoff contention right now?
I think it would have to be somebody that the only guys that make a ton of sense to me are players who you would get their bird rights and you feel like they maybe are an option for 2019 at a reasonable price. I think so that kind of limits what you want to do. You know, I think with how much we've seen out of Melton and Okobo to a lesser extent, but especially Melton, and seeing Booker's playmaking take another leap this year, to me, it feels like maybe, you know, some of the guys like Tyus Jones make a little less sense because now you're just bringing another guy in and watching as he kind of competes and takes minutes away from the two you already have in place, plus Booker. But, you know, if you like a Corey Joseph, Darren Collison, Patrick Beverley, those guys who you might be able to convince to stick around for another year or two after this one and you get their bird rights and you can retain them at with an easier financial hit, then maybe you do that.
Yeah, I think that's something to watch moving forward here. I believe the deadline is now around 6 weeks away, so look forward for that. But for my flagrant foul, it's actually going to be Josh Jackson here. 14 minutes, he had 6 fouls.
Yeah, rough.
Yeah, really rough night for him. 1-for-4, 0-of-2 on threes. 6 fouls in 14 minutes, also 2 turnovers to 0 assists. 2 total points for Josh Jackson. It feels like this is the first time in a couple of weeks we've had him as far as a negative goes. And it kind of snapped his streak there of really positive play, and it seemed like, especially last night against the long, lanky guys that Golden State has, his lack of length and his lack of just court awareness at the moment just really was a big red flag last night as far as not like long-term potential, but just going against a match like Golden State.
Yeah, he was frustrated and inconsistent, fouled, I think, just out of not frustration, but didn't have the right positioning and focus against the matchups that Golden State kind of forces you into. Switching across all 5 positions and all that. He just wasn't really in the right spots a lot of the time on defense, especially in the first half. I think the 3 of his fouls came in his first like 5 or 6 minutes of action. So rough night for him. And especially because on offense, his first drive to the basket, he finished over Draymond Green with a spin move that looked really nice, but just wasn't able to continue the night like he would have hoped.
Yeah. If you want to, before we go on to our next segment here, I want to just hit on Josh Jackson one more point there. It's just the wing rotation long term. How do you see it shaking out? I mean, at least for the next few weeks, because we're now seeing Mikal Bridges get easily 30, 35 minutes per game. TJ Warren, 30, 35 minutes per game. Kelly Oubre is going to probably get 20 or 25 minutes per game the rest of the season. Do you see any issue as far as getting these wings all minutes? I personally don't, but what say you?
No, I don't think so. I think especially with how interchangeable pretty much all of the lineup is at this point, outside of, you know, basically Ayton and Holmes, one of those two guys on the court at all times. And that's pretty ironed out at this point, but everyone else is, I feel like, pretty interchangeable. You know, Booker can be the point guard or he can play off the ball. Melton, same way. And then between Oubre, Warren, Bridges, and Jackson, all of those guys can play 2 through 4 for the most part. So I think it's a weapon and a tool rather than a inhibition for this team. I think that they can definitely make use of it, and we've already seen that come to fruition. So I think, you know, it's up to Igor to maximize it, and I think he's done a good job of doing that, because Jackson will be off a lot of nights, or Bridges same way against, you know, the Thunder. We saw him kind of get exploited defensively and he didn't play as much that night. So I think it's definitely not a problem.
As far as my stat to watch goes, it's actually going to be 50%, which is 14 of 20 from the field for the Golden State Warriors. They're 54.8% from the field overall. Kevin Durant, when he's on, 3 of 4 from 3. Steph Curry, 5 of 9. Klay Thompson, 2 of 4 from 3. You really have no chance of winning any game if you're an NBA team. But like we said at the top of the podcast, it's pretty impressive that the Suns stuck with this team like they did for 18 minutes.
Yeah, I think it didn't really come alive until the end of that second quarter. And some of that was, you know, not really getting their offense going like it could have. Guys missing open shots. Jonas Jerebko was one guy I noticed missed a couple that kind of saved the Suns. But once the stars got going, they really stood no chance. And, you know, I mentioned at the beginning when I brought up that 3-point shooting, like the team as a whole didn't get hot. But from three, the 3 guys who matter shot, what is it, 10 of like 16. So that can't happen if you're hoping to compete with the Warriors. And that's the reality against these guys most nights, but it's definitely the Suns didn't do themselves any favors losing track of those guys so often. But my stat to watch is there's quite a few. I was kind of trying to narrow it down, but it's actually a positive one. I mean, I think 13 turnovers is right around where they've been. It's probably a little higher than they would like it to be, but that was something that stood out to me in that first half stretch where they were competitive is, you know, you really can't make life so much easier on the Warriors defense by turning the ball over. That's how they prey on teams is they get the ball and now they're controlling the tempo. They're controlling the flow of the game. They're not even having to run anything in the half court because they're just pulling up from three in transition. And that's kind of their haymaker. And so the Suns were able to avoid that for most of the game. Or most of the first half to say it at least, but you know, Booker had 5, but no one else was above 2 turnovers. And I think that was a positive sign to see them not kind of roll over against this team because, you know, I think early in the year, this probably wouldn't have even been a competition. They would have started the game off with 5 or 6 turnovers and never looked back.
Yeah, that's really interesting as far as that goes. And I want to say again, 132-1, that was the final score of the game. The Golden State Warriors really ran away with this thing in the second half. But looking ahead to Philadelphia tomorrow, Brendan, what's your thoughts on that game? Because the Suns are 9-29 on the season, really on the line as 10 wins or 30 losses. What they get to first? What say you?
I don't think they're going to win. I feel like it's just too much talent. Although another not very deep team, similar to what the Suns kind of have to struggle with. So, you know, if the bench were to step up tomorrow night against the Sixers, I think that might be one area. You know, if Kelly Oubre had a big game, if Jamal Crawford got back to his usual production, if Elia Kobo went off, something like that, I think maybe that's kind of the way you can beat this Philly team. But I just don't think they have the tools to wear down the Sixers offense right now. I don't necessarily know if the young defense can hold up against Joel Embiid, who's looking like Shaq, and Jimmy Butler, who they really don't have an answer for. But it'll be a fun test. I think, you know, they were competitive against this team the last time they played, and that was when all their 3 stars were healthy back then too. Maybe not quite as acclimated to one another. It was shortly after the Butler trade, but I think it's a team that Phoenix always plays pretty tough. So I'm excited to, well, I'll be there this time. So, and we both will. So that'll be a fun one.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I agree with you. I believe the Suns will lose that game to go to 9-30, but I think it will be close because Devin Booker, for some reason, always loves playing Philadelphia and usually goes off against them. So it will be really fun to watch. But that'll be it for today's episode, guys. I appreciate you guys listening in. And once again, Happy New Year. We'll be back to you guys live from Talk City Resort Arena tomorrow to recap the Sixers game.